Well, welcome, everyone. We're excited to be here today for our Aha Moments podcast, where we celebrate great teachers and great instruction. And here we go again. We are going to learn a lot today. For those joining us, we're excited to have you. We're going to learn about teaching, teaching strategies, and just celebrating all the work we get to do every day to influence the teaching and learning in our classrooms. So this is episode 4 of our new podcast, and we have two great teachers with us today. We'll have them introduce themselves in just a moment. I am Dan Evans, and I'm our Chief Academic Officer with the school district.
And I am Jolene Jackson, and I am the Director of Professional Development for Pinellas County Schools.
Wow. Are you excited to be here today, Jolene?
I am so excited to be here, and so excited that I'm calling this a podcast party. So let's go ahead and get this podcast party started.
All right.
And we're going to start by having our teachers introduce themselves. And so we'll begin with Pam. Tell us a little bit. Tell us your name, where you teach, and how long you've been teaching and what you teach, and we'll get started.
Okay. Hi, my name is Pam Himmel. I teach at Carwise Middle School. I teach 8th grade science, and this is my 14th year of teaching.
Wow. Well, thank you, Pam, for being here. We're excited to have you down from Carwise today. And who else is with us today?
My name is Tarek Mowat. I teach on accelerated 6th grade math at Meadow Lawn Middle School.
Wow. Two middle school teachers with us today. Mm-hmm. I taught high school. I know you taught elementary. So bless you for teaching our middle school kids. That's the first thing we want to make sure that we say. Well, this podcast started because the Teaching and Learning Division, which I oversee, and the Professional Development Division that Jolene oversees, really are getting together to say, what are the key teacher strategies, right? The key teacher moves that we make in our classrooms that maybe have come naturally for you now that maybe we could give back to teachers who are still learning the craft, right? So this is a give back opportunity and we're excited to do that. And today's topic for episode number 4 is really talking about how we begin from the teacher, right, having the knowledge and the smarts, which is why you've been hired, and then releasing that learning over to students so they can really master the content. And that's really the power of great teachers. Jolene, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's great. And in every episode, we are tying a common thread around teacher efficacy. And really what that means for our listeners out there is that teachers believe in themselves that they have the power to affect student learning, that it isn't their parents that affect student learning, that it isn't class size necessarily that affects student learning, but really you as the teacher, you hold the power to affect student learning. But it's, power isn't really quite the right word, but you have a belief in yourself. But we talk a lot about how confidence isn't just a cologne. And so, you know, we don't go to professional development and professional learning opportunities and say affirmations like, I am a great teacher, or my students will learn, or, just that isn't really how teachers develop their confidence in their craft. Really how they develop their confidence in their craft is by learning high leverage strategies. And we'll talk a little bit more about that today, that we reliably know that affects student learning, and that those that really gets those learning gains that we're looking for in that student understanding.
And so that's what's really going to get us started today, is this idea that hopefully you're aware of it. You may not be aware of it. We'll try to unpack that today. What are the key moves you're making in your classrooms to turn that learning and the mastery of content over to students? And so that's where we're going to begin today. So let's ask you, Pam, to start. When we think a little bit about releasing learning over to students, from you over to the students, what comes to mind and what do you do in your classroom to make that happen?
Okay, so one of the things I've noticed in the last couple of years is since we've done the COVID years, yeah, is that students are a little hesitant to take risks, to try something. They're really somewhat afraid to make mistakes. We have to reteach them how to be independent, because I think some of them lost that ability during that time. So for me, I try anytime I'm teaching a new strategy that I'm doing, if we're getting into content that I know is a little bit more complicated, I try and show them what I'm expecting them to do. I kind of talk aloud and do a little bit of speaking about what I'm thinking so I can try and erase their ability to do a little metacognitive thinking when they're going through things. I let them try it out. I let them chat peer-to-peer to see whether or not they're on the same page. I recheck in with them. And then hopefully they've got a little bit more confidence to go ahead and try it on their own.
Wow. You know, during this podcast, we talk about mind-blown moments. Usually come later in the podcast. I'm already mind-blown right now. I'm mind-blown right. by Pam's answer and that she can do that in eighth grade science with middle school kids. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Jolene?
Well, yeah. I mean, mind-blown just hearing the how you started out with the metacognition. And so for our listeners out there, what you're talking about, that metacognition, is really you showing your thinking, modeling for your students, and you're modeling your own productive struggle. Like, oh, is it this? Maybe it's this. And you're modeling the thinking that goes through there. It's both providing a model of what the expectation for the learning is, but it's also providing a model for how they are to think through this process before you turn it over to them.
Right. Answers don't come automatically, and they have to learn that they don't have to immediately do it 100% perfect, that they can take steps to get there.
Wow. I love that. What do you think about that, Derek?
I'm actually coming from the elementary environment mostly, and now this is my first year in middle school. So a lot of what I've learned at first was for modeling is direct modeling, and I'm in front of the board majority of the time. And if I'm writing an essay to them, I'm typing it up on the screen, showing them how to write it and doing it very directly. And what I've done more in middle school now is I might model for 5 minutes how to do a problem, how to do a concept, and then I'll back up. This is not my space anymore. This is your guys' space to try and figure out this problem. And so I'm just here to help, but that problem is all yours. And so that really, they get excited for that now. And they're like, I want to go up to the board. I want to show you that I can do it. Or if someone's confused, they want to go up to the board because they want the help from other students. And so it's a lot more student input in that way.
Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing that you're being more of the guide on the side, whereas previous, more what we sometimes call the sage on the stage.
Yeah.
But I don't want to... you talked a little bit about explicit teaching and modeling, which is really, really important. Mm-hmm. But then as what you're speaking about is the stage of learner development, that you recognize that middle schoolers should have a little more independence, and you do short bits of modeling and are providing that
correct
productive struggle. Before we got started, and because I want our teachers to have tangible strategies that is while they're listening to this podcast to go out and implement. I want them being able to have more freedom to use some of our district resources that we provide. Right before we got started, you were talking about Nearpod and how mm-hmm. you use that as a tool for modeling, how you use that for the guided practice piece and yep. for students working together and collaborating and for you being able to see the work. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Of course. So what I've begun doing, what I've always done is I have either my iPad or I have my laptop. I'll take it to the back of the room. I'll project wirelessly and I'll have the problem up there. I'll freeze the screen and the problem's up there for all the students to do. And the students are, again, talking about it, trying to solve it themselves. Meanwhile, I'm in the back of the room just monitoring them. I'm looking on the screen, scrolling, seeing who's done it, what are they thinking. And so my thing isn't really their behavior per se. My thing is more who's getting it, who's understanding it, and who is completely lost. And so I can kind of focus on that.
I love it. Right there, I'm thinking formative assessment. In the moment, timely, you are able to just scroll right through there and see how your students are doing in the moment so that you can start providing feedback or seeing which kids are getting it, struggling, and start forming those teams.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say mind-blown again. We can't be mind-blown twice this early in the podcast. But yes, you're right. And I also think the technology here as a tool to really release learning to students and letting them struggle a little bit. We've heard both of you say that. One of the terms I think we'll come back to in a minute when we get to the research part of this is productive struggle. Mm-hmm. And it's where Pam was taking us and where you took us. Letting students struggle, not always trying to save them, letting them mm-hmm. struggle through it. Of course, we don't want them to be wrong to the point of being confused and frustrated. So we do have to somehow repair their thinking at some point. But that struggle is part of the natural process of learning. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Pam?
I think that part of the thing is paying attention, like when you're doing formative assessment, mm-hmm. you're walking around and you can see the kids who have the deer in the headlights look. Mm-hmm. So you know that they don't even know where to start. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of jump in and at least maybe give them a little bit of encouragement. I think it's important that we know that no matter what we're doing, even when we release to students, we still have to be prepared to scaffold for them mm-hmm. when they need that. If it's something that you can do with peer-to-peer discussion where somebody else can be explaining it or they can be checking each other's work, then that's still student ownership. And that's not me necessarily throwing in the lifesaver to everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's important. But I do think that occasionally you still need to realize when you might need to grab a handful of students and do a small group in a corner of the room and actually help them out if they need a little bit more guided instruction before they can be released again.
Okay, now that right there is a veteran teacher, master teacher mm-hmm. move. That's why I want to jump in because mm-hmm. I want our teachers who are listening to understand what you just said. I think it's very important. And that is to understand that, yes, I may have to pull students aside. And if that's the case, I'll have to reteach in a sense, mm-hmm. a small group or the whole class maybe. But otherwise, how can students help themselves? How can students go to another student for the answer? Mm-hmm. How can the students go to an anchor chart for support? Mm-hmm. Those are great scaffolds because I'm teaching students how to help themselves learn content. Mm-hmm. And that's probably something we didn't all do on our first day in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, and maybe this might be a related question for us to dive down into, and that is for the younger teacher. When you were newer as a teacher mm-hmm. to where you are today, the things that you're trying now, I'm sure you didn't use to the effectiveness that you do now. So think back a couple years or several years for some of us. What advice would you give to a teacher who might be struggling to release that over to the students?
Well, my first piece that I would do is my first couple of years, one of the things that I would say that was the biggest issue to be able to actually release to students or to do any of that is I didn't have very set structures and routines in my class that my students knew at every moment when I said we were doing this kind of activity, that they knew exactly what my expectations are for what the classroom environment looked like.
Wow.
And so, you know, it didn't matter what I was trying to teach. If everything was a hot mess and chaos, nothing I was doing was going to get it through. So establishing those routines where my kids know immediately what to do when I say we're doing this, and that they're prepared for whatever the next step is going to be, that's the key piece. And I think that's one of the things that newer teachers don't necessarily consider to be as important as content, but mm-hmm. actually I think initially it's a lot more important. You can't get to content until you have those routines set.
Wow. And teaching those routines, I heard you say, until you could turn them over to the kids. Tarek, what would you say about that?
I'm a writer by trade. And so one of the things that I was always taught by my mentors is that you need to learn the rules before you can break the rules or apply more things to the rules.
I love it.
So much like you said, you need your structure. But once you got your structure down, play with it a little bit. See what fits into there. So know when you can break the rules with your class and they'll recognize what you're doing. And they'll even like want to jump in because they're like, ooh, this is something new that we don't normally do. I started teaching up in Jacksonville, Florida. And one of the things that my principal and my assistant principal really helped me out with, rituals and routines. So it's like meat and potatoes, rituals and routines. Get that down pat first. And so that's something that I was told, you're not going to get until like year four, year five. So to my younger teachers, hang in there. This is only year five for me. But once you get it down, like you can have fun with it and your students will respond in kind.
That's it. That's great, great, great. Any thoughts, Jolene, to what you're hearing as far as the maybe connections to what we know to be true in research and what we know to be true in best practice.
So. Yeah. So one of the things that I think getting back to students really owning the learning, talk to us a little bit about the explicit strategies that you have used to move them through that modeling and into the guided practice and then into the independent practice. And you started us before we got on talking about applied learning, that you believe that until they are able to apply it in a real world context, that there isn't real understanding. And so I'd like to hear a little bit more about how you get students to that place.
Okay, so after we've done some of the basic stuff with understanding some of the foundational concepts, I quite frequently put students into groups or occasionally it's an independent assignment and I'm just going to do something I've just recently done in class. When we finished learning all the concepts for thermal energy, my students were given the problem to defend the three bears because Mama Bear's bowl breaks the rules of thermodynamics. So they had to prove that Mama Bear's bowl could be colder even though it had more volume than baby bears. So they had to write, design, come up with and test their own lab and do their inquiry. They had to take all those pieces and put it together for me in a mini poster presentation that the group just created together. And then after that, I used talking about our technology tools because it's one of my favorites. I don't overkill use it, but one of my favorite things to use is Book Creator. And so I actually made them, while they did the lab as a group, individually, they had to creatively rewrite the part of Goldilocks and the Three Bears with the porch story, but they had to write it scientifically to tell me what was actually happening with using all the terminology and everything that we've used to apply it, to use it correctly and rewrite the story for me. And it still had to sound like a story. They had to illustrate it. They had to use all of it. But that was their summative assessment for me on thermal energy.
Wow, my mind is blown again because in Dr. Evans and I, we often talk about this interdisciplinary learning and that we cannot stay siloed in our own content. Where it really expands is when we're applying everything that we learn in other contents, and you're doing that so beautifully. Like I'm hearing academic, they're going to have to use academic vocabulary. I'm hearing that they're going to be writing. They're going to have to tell it in somewhat of a story and yet use scientific to provide evidence. And so there's a real synthesis in that, you know, Bloom's level of taxonomy, the highest level of thinking is synthesis. And that's absolutely what you're talking about. So that's really wonderful.
Yeah, I wanted to add to that then, since you took us down that path. And the idea of synthesis is summarizing all these things I've learned and then making sense for myself about what this, and then applying it either to my life or to a project. And so that cements learning. It's not just fun. It is fun. Hopefully the projects are fun, but it also cements learning. And maybe newer teachers may not even realize that the conversation I'm having with each other, my classmates, and the conversation I'm having with myself about where I am in my own learning cements the learning of science and mathematics. Tarek, what do you think about that?
We have a project we're doing ourselves right now, and it's just related to spending money. And so I gave them a certain amount of money they can use, and we broke it down by percentages to what, you know, 20% on electronics, 30% on this. And just, I put them in partners and just to kind of see what, they would want to spend on. And just seeing them kind of collaborate and just being like, all right, we need to spend every penny here, but we need to account for tax, but we need to account for this. But, you know, all right, this is $700 right here. But if I go on another website, and just kind of seeing them use mathematical concepts towards actual real world things has really helped them going forward.
The whole notion of productive struggle, the idea that students should be asked to struggle. And then the other thing we're hearing is never underestimate what students can, that what they have the capacity to learn if we just turn the learning over to them. I wanted to turn things over to the research a minute and Hattie's effect sizes. Jolene, can you talk a little bit about how we use Hattie and other researchers to kind of just affirm that what we're doing is a best practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So Hattie is one of the researchers that we talk about on this podcast. And so we want to be, I mean, you're talking, you know these things from experience. Like you see the aha moments and the light bulbs coming off in the classrooms with your students. But really, that's great. And there's research that backs that what you're talking about is really important. And so setting those student expectations and modeling systems, routines, unpacking the learning target, what you talked about, modeling for them, thinking aloud, really making sure that the students have clarity, that has a effect size of 1.44, which for our listeners, what that means is anything above a 0.4 is a strategy worth implementing. And it's on a scale between, actually, we have strategies in education, believe it or not, that have a negative effect size. And so Hattie has a scale that starts, I believe, at negative 0.2. And then the scale goes all the way to 1.62. So that is the highest effect size. So what you're talking about, like that modeling, that gradual release, productive struggle, metacognition, those all have really high effect size that the research says if we reliably use them in our classroom, students are really going to learn and understand.
Yeah, and that's why we always go back to the research, because I think a couple of things, and it matters to the folks who listen to our podcast as teachers. One is we trust the research, assuming it's good sound research, on our best practices, but also we trust our experience. So I think in this podcast, we try to bring together the research mm-hmm. and the experience of our practitioners like yourselves to say, yes, not only do I know the research, but I've tried that and I know it to work. And that's when we know it really works. Then it becomes a real best practice. One of the things that's unique about that, before we leave the research side of this, is this the theme that you mentioned early in the podcast today about teacher efficacy. Teacher efficacy is literally the most high-yield, researched, mm-hmm. evidence-based thing that's bringing return on student learning. And you've explained what that is, and that is the teacher's skill set, the teacher's belief that I got this. The things I'm doing, the levers I'm pulling are making a difference for the learning in my room. I'm not just guessing.
I'm not winging it.
Learning isn't lucky. Mm-hmm. But another high-yield return is students' expectations of themselves. Mm-hmm. In Hattie's work and the other researchers, its effect size is 1.4 something. It's a very, very high effect size. And it just means this. I believe that I'm going to learn this material. I believe I am learning. I believe I am smart. And that comes with perfect practice, getting things right. But once kids gain that self-efficacy and self-confidence, then get out of their way. And so that's a good place for us to maybe have you as we get near the end of this episode mm-hmm. to talk a little bit about what you think about building their confidence in the classroom through the actions you're taking. What do you think about that?
Okay, so I think a lot of times kids get in their own way. Mm. They put up their own like hurdles to jump over because they're just kind of carrying baggage from whatever they might have heard in earlier years. And I always let them know at the beginning of the year that I never talk to teachers that they've had before. Mm-hmm. I never look at their past records when I wind up having them. When we get in later, I'll start to look at some of their previous test scores. But I don't do that at the beginning because I want to establish my own perceptions of where we are. So I let them know that they actually really have a clean spot to sit with. Mm. And my kids who perhaps maybe aren't at the level that I think they can be, I like pull them aside and we have individual conversations. And that might be where I look at data from things that are coming from the district and talking to them and asking them what they think is happening. Because I don't want to tell them what's happening. I ask them, so what do you think's going on? Because I want them to actually start to do that. I want them to start to think about goals that they want to set. Because I think that actually, we have to change their mindset. And a lot of them have that, by eighth grade, a lot of them have that very baked in as to what they think they're capable of.
Pam has been consistent. I can see it in her teaching strategies and in her philosophies about releasing things over to students and bringing them along to a point where they believe in themselves. We keep hearing that in your voice and in your strategies, and we thank you for your contributions today.
Thank you.
Tarek, what do you think about it when we say helping students gain confidence that they can do it? What comes to mind?
First of all, I love what she said earlier where it says students build their own barriers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to realize we want to like take a sledgehammer to it for them, but we can't. We have to hand it to them and said, this is for you to knock down. And
I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I've realized myself is that a lot of kids they'll hear that from other teachers and they'll actively complain about other teachers. I'm not saying any teacher is bad or anything like that, but students will, of course, everyone's different. And so not every strategy will work on every student. Some students will respond negatively or they've had bad strategies applied to them. And they'll tell me about them. This teacher did this. And I'm like, that's not this classroom. And just establishing that safe space, that safe space with them is so important to build their confidence up. And I've seen students that scared to go up to the board, scared to even say it, raise their hand for an answer. And now they're like, no, let me go up to the board because I don't know it. And I know that the rest of my classmates have my back. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to see every time.
The capacity of young persons in the hands of great teachers is really limitless. We typically close our podcast with a quote. Did you want to pose a quote today that for our guests to consider?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. So the quote that we would like to hear your final thoughts on is, learning is more than absorbing facts. It is acquiring understanding.
Good.
Well, what I take from that is learning is like a puzzle. And if it's just a fact, then you give me a puzzle, I can put the piece exactly where it needs to be to finish the puzzle. But if I understand it, someone can just dump a puzzle in front of me and I just know this is the puzzle and I can know like where to do the outline, you know, you do the edge pieces. Oh, I know where to put the colors in. I can kind of put this together myself. But if you just tell me a fact, all right, I can put that last piece in, but I can't. If you just dump a puzzle in front of me, I'm just going to stare at you until you help me put it together.
Yeah. Nice analogy.
Thank you.
I think part of the problem is if we get into the point where we're just asking kids to memorize vocabulary or memorize any other piece, then if you throw a question at them that requires them to think and put things together, they have no idea how to do that. They don't know how to take apart complex pieces. So I believe very strongly in letting the kids have to develop a little bit of grit and figuring out how to put things together. I don't know that they actually meant it as a compliment, but one of my favorite quotes that I got from a student of mine wound up letting me know that I was the teacher who kicked the training wheels off the bike and just made them realize that they could ride. Wow. And I think that pretty much sums me up. They may not love me at the beginning of the year, but they really like me when they know they're ready to go to high school.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Well, I think you guys have affirmed lots of great things for us today. I hope that many of our teachers who are listening in, or maybe newer teachers, learning some of the craft. I hope we've helped them to kick the training wheels off and and to trust their own instincts. You know, all teachers can be great. When we were newer teachers, we weren't so sure, maybe. Mm-hmm. But all teachers can be great. And we believe in kids. All kids can learn. All kids can be mm-hmm. brilliant. I was listening to someone speaking the other day, and they were saying that they were a movie star. And the lady movie star said something to the effect of, I'm a star and I'm willing to say I'm a star, but the point that I realized that I could say I'm a star was when I realized that everybody was one. Everybody has the potential to be brilliant. We just have to go find that brilliance. And what these teachers are doing, Jolene, is raising kids up to believe that and then teaching them certain things to the point where they are then making that happen and manifesting mm-hmm. that agency. Oh. Your thoughts about that?
No, I love what you're saying, and as both of you were speaking today, I was seeing you in the back of the room. I was seeing mm-hmm. you right next to a small group while kids were learning in the learning environment and kind of moving around. And so it really is you trust your students, you teach your students to trust you and how to trust each other. And in that, like, this learning really blossoms. And yeah, I'm really seeing a community of learners in everything that you guys have shared today. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate you being with us. It's been great. I'm inspired.
Yes,
are you not, Jolene?
I'm very excited
to have been here with you today. We've learned a lot together. We hope those listening in have learned a lot. And
Yeah.
Well, we hope people join us next time.
Join us next time for more aha moments.
Thank you. Right. Thank you for being here today.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan. Yep. Appreciate it. We had fun, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.